action-packed show for you today. We're going to break down these two NFC-AFC matchups in depth, leaving nothing to the imagination. So hope you're happy. Hope you're on board and excited for a great show. And Stats, Happy New Year. Welcome back. And I'm excited for a new semester of Bedtime Sports.
Oh, absolutely. Our final semester, at least, of being in the KWR studio or the KWUR studio out here in St. Louis at Washington University in St. Louis. And it's just fantastic to have the Patriots once again in the championship round. You know, being from Boston, we kind of have the rivalry being brought back together. I'm not talking about the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers, which it's one of the worst matchups in NBA history coming up tonight at the Garden, but out in Denver, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, part of that little bit of a, I guess we'll call it the love triangle of the, of a nice little, nice little rivalry that they put together these last, I'd say about a decade. It's amazing that we've seen so much from these players and this coach that so much on the field. And then we have Wes Welker to be a part of this as well, comparing them to just being world beaters, basically, this past week, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. There's just so much to talk about with this story. The problem is that Omaha took over the entire week, and doesn't it feel like Super Bowl week when they make some stupid story out of this very small thing? And I just feel like that, I guess Super Bowl week came a few weeks early.
Yeah, no, it's been a fun week of sports talk, and there's been a lot of legacy talk this week. Oh, who needs this game more? You know, once you get these types of matchups, you start to talk about the best ever, and the name Joe Montana comes up, and we can get into that. But I think let's start off the show right away. Let's get going with our takes. Let's break down the matchup. You know, we said part by part. We'll talk about who has the advantage, disadvantage, where we see potential opportunities for both teams to exploit the matchups, and then we'll make our picks for that game. We'll get into the Seattle-San Francisco game, which is just as juicy a matchup, if not more. So let's start at the top, all right? Let's start with coaching. This one, I think, you know, I don't think we're going to have much disagreement on, but who has the advantage at coaching, and do you think it's one of the advantages that ultimately decides the game in this matchup?
That's really interesting. And are we talking about, I guess, are we just looking at the head coach, or are we looking at
in its totality.
That's interesting. That's very interesting, because I really don't think that in this situation, you know, the teams are so close in how they've performed and what they do in what you think this game will be. You think it's going to be really a close game, so one move might change it, but I think it might be the X factor rather than the totality. You know what I'm saying? It won't change the game. It may have an impact on one specific play, whether an icing of the kicker or some idea of that, but I think it's going to be the execution of the players rather than the coaches that's going to affect this game.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, you know, to me, John Fox is a very conservative coach. We saw that with the play calling in that game in Week 12 against the Patriots. So much running the ball, even though they were up. They didn't really step on their throats. They destroyed the Tim Tebow Broncos a few years back with John Fox at the helm in Denver and then subsequently in New England. I don't know if you saw this. The defensive coordinator of the Broncos is Jack Del Rio. Tom Brady's numbers against Jack Del Rio coach defenses. He's 7-0 all time against Jack Del Rio coach defenses with a 73% completion percentage, 17 touchdowns and no interceptions, and a pass rating of 121. In other words, he eats Jack Del Rio defenses alive. It just seems like Jack Del Rio can't really make adjustments against Brady. So in that respect, you know, I'm not counting on, you know, the defensive coordinator of the Broncos to dial up anything to really stop Brady unless Brady stops himself. You know, unless the lack of weapons, unless Brady just doesn't have it, if Brady's illness that was so talked about a few days ago, he missed practice.
Super Bowl week, that's what it feels like. Just with all these overblown, oh, he's out for a day. He misses that practice almost every day of the season anyway. It's just because people don't follow a team throughout the season. They are able to overblow things like this from having only four teams remaining. When you talk about the Denver defense, though, this is going to be very interesting. I understand Jack Del Rio being at the helm there, and he was actually the head coach for a few games this season when John Fox was able to get his quick medical emergency out of the way, and it's great that he's actually back for the playoffs, especially with Denver playing so well. And I feel like when it comes to the defense, though, it's a huge thing as far as the injuries. This is really something that I don't think has been talked about much this week. Chris Harris, torn ACL, their best cornerback on the Denver Broncos, is out. The Broncos signed former Pats cornerback Marquise, or yeah, He spells it very interesting.
Marquise Cole.
Marquise, interesting. Yeah. Marquise Cole, former Patriot. I just think that's a huge difference. And people are talking about stupid stories when they aren't talking about actual players on the field who are infecting this game.
Yep. No, and we haven't even mentioned Von Miller. And that was
there you go, yes.
That's their best player is out.
Decimated teams.
But exactly. The injuries definitely play a role of who's on and off the field this week. So that'll be interesting. The fact is, though, and I guess we can move on to the next part. Let's go into passing offenses, you know, versus the opposing passing defenses. The Broncos are totally healthy now with Julius Thomas and Welker back. Their running backs are, you know, true to form. Monte Ball's no longer fumbling the ball. You got Brady with a bunch of short white receivers. Maybe Dobson. Maybe Who Man. You know, a little Matthew Mulligan. You got to give the edge to the Broncos passing the offense in that respect, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those situations in which the Patriots are going to have to find a way to always stall their offense, the Broncos offense. It's tough because they were the record setters, the best team, arguably the best offense in NFL history, the best passing offense. And then No'Shawn Moreno coming along, he and LeGarrette Blount, when we talk about rushing, that's going to help this passing offense for both teams because of how well they've rushed this season. And Moreno is fantastic. It's great. And, well, it's really helpful when a guy doesn't have that much mileage on him because then you can really ride him in the playoffs. Marshawn Lynch, I don't know, when we go talk about the Seattle Seahawks, is he going to be able to continue with all the miles that he has playing almost 8 years now? I think with these guys, you're looking at two running backs who can really help out the passing offenses, and I think it comes down to, is Brady or Manning, are they going to be able to throw the long ball? We really haven't seen them do that much with that, so I think when it comes down to the long ball, if there's a long pass in this game, it can change the game, just like last year when Denver was upset by Baltimore, that long pass play at the end by Flacco.
Yep.
If there's one of those, that might determine the game.
Yep. No, I think when you play Manning, you've got to try and make him work for it. You know, you don't want to let up the type of touchdown that Blount had last week, that 73-yarder. It's a 29-22 game before you know a 36-22, and that really was, you know, the start of the beginning of the end for the Colts. Here's the question stats. The Pats have been so successful with running the ball the last month, dominant. And they've really been doing a good job of splitting the carries and keeping the running backs fresh with Ridley, Vereen, Blount. It's really been a work of art. But if the Pats get down early, with the weapons that they have through the passing game right now, or the lack thereof, how long do you stick with the run? How confident are you running the ball when Denver's strength is more their run defense than their pass defense? But right now, it seems like the Pats' pass offense is inferior to their run offense. So, do you think the Pats are going to have to pass the ball to win this week, or do you think they really can rely on the run to the same extent like they did last week?
Is it possible that Bill Belichick was just setting this up to be a 60-pass game for Brady or a 50-pass game for Brady just because after you saw LeGarrette Blount just run all over the game last week? It just seems like it'd be perfect Belichickian philosophy to just turn the screws on the Denver Broncos. But Indianapolis did give up the sixth most yards per rush attempt this season of any team in the NFL. So it's a team that can be run on. I understand that they're a pretty solid rush defense, but it's a situation in which Blount might end up having 100 yards in this game just because they can take advantage of that rush defense. I think they actually have an opportunity to. But when you look at last week and you look at Woodhead, 29 yards, Matthews, 26 yards, that was because they were down, the Chargers. This week, I don't think the Patriots are going to go down 14-0. They can. It easily can happen just because of the Broncos play their offense. But I think the Pats will actually stick to a plan, most likely, and give their chance on the rushing game.
The other interesting chess match component of this game is if the Pats do the exact same thing they did last time when they played the Broncos, go with the two deep safeties and just dare Moreno to get 5-6 yards a carry and say, you know, front seven, you got to make your plays. We're not giving Manning anything over the top. We're not going to let our cornerbacks, you know, hang out to dry, especially because you're going to have probably Jamie Collins on Julius Thomas, which, you know, you saw some spark out of Jamie Collins last week, but on paper that's a mismatch. Demaryius Thomas against anyone, I mean, even Aqib Talib, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, the last time they played, for the most part, Demaryius Thomas was shut down, but that was mostly because of the wind. That wind was ridiculous. There was a couple throws that Demaryius just burned Tlaib, and the ball hung up in the air, and Tlaib was able to recover. I've heard it's supposed to be 60 degrees and sunny in Denver. Weather, I do not think, is going to be an issue like it was that freezing cold night in Boston. So it's going to be interesting to see how, if Belichick's okay letting up another 230-yard game from Knowshon Moreno. Because on paper, that sounds like a really bad thing to allow, but yet the Pats won that game. Do you allow Manning to throw for 400, and you hope to get some pressure on him, force a couple picks? That I don't have an answer to that. I just think that's going to be an interesting storyline to watch.
I think the question becomes: do you really want Peyton to have the chance at really making a huge game with all the yards after catch that his receivers can give him? Demaryius Thomas is great in the open field. Decker, not so much. He's tripped over himself a few times this season. It's hilarious to watch. So if you let him go out in the open field, that's fine. But Decker, Thomas actually can actually get going. That's Julius Thomas, the tight end, in addition to Demaryius. And then, of course, Wes Welker just being able to slice and dice a defense. I think that's why you want to give the running game a little bit more. And that's what they did early in the season. I think they would do that again.
Yeah, and it seems like with John Fox and with how Manning is, like, he'll take what he's given. He's not going to force the issue. I was listening to Felger and Maz earlier this week, and they were saying, if you really want to test out the Pats, go five wide to start the game, and see how whether the Pats can really deal with that. You know, make the safeties have to cover right off the bat. So that's going to be fun to watch. I think if the Pats want to win this game, I don't think it can be played in the 30s. I'm thinking it's going to be in the 20s.
Absolutely.
I'm just not sure that the way the Pats are constructed. I know they put up 43 last week, but I think it's a deceiving 43. They had the near pick six, short fields, four interceptions. It wasn't an offensive explosion. Brady threw for 198 yards. I'm just not sure you want to get into a shootout with the most prolific offense of all time. And that's, I mean, let's just think back to 2007, 2008. The way to beat the Pats that year, obviously the Giants' blueprint, was to keep the game low scoring. Because when you get in a shootout with the most prolific offense in the game, that's a death spell for you. It's probably not going to work. So I think the Pats got to make the game long, string it out, keep Manning off the field, home to field goals, try to keep this game in the 20s.
It'll be absolutely interesting to see Brady out there coming off that 50-attempt game against the Denver Broncos last year. Well, Blunt only had two carries. How it really has changed with the philosophies as we discussed. It's going to be very interesting because Brandon Bolden's not going to get 13 carries in this game.
No.
It's going to be a lot of Blunt, and it's going to be we'll see if Brady's going to have to pass the ball a lot. If he does, then it's not looking good for the Pats.
Yeah, well, and we'll see. One thing that's important for the passing game is the run game to be able to set up play action. I think Absolutely. One of the biggest plays of last week's game against the Colts was that they do it once a game, and it like gets me very excited, is that play where they literally have the entire line run to the right as though it's a stretch play to the right, and then Brady pulls it back and goes left. Someone wham blocks the guy coming from the outside from the right side, and then Brady threw it to Amendola for that like 50-yard gain. And that they do that about once a game, and it gets me very excited because it's awesome. Like literally the entire offense is moving one way, and a wide receiver is leaking out open. That's open once a game. All I'm saying is if they can make the Broncos respect the run, get their safeties come up even a step closer. That makes Edelman, Amendola, Colley, Dobson, if he plays, Tompkins, that much more effective. So the Pats, I think, need to run to win this game, but they don't need to run to the extent that they did last week. I still have trust in Tom Brady having the ball.
Oh, definitely. Oh, I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
So every time Manning and Brady have faced off in the playoffs, or at least I think it's in the playoffs, the winner has gone on to win the championship. That's three times. Does the winner of this game win the championship?
Yeah, if I'm a betting man, I think the winner of the NFC matchup wins the Super Bowl.
Oh, interesting.
I still...
Because of the defense? Because of how just the shutting down, the idea that you were talking about before?
Physicality. Yeah, physicality. Being able to win the line of scrimmage on both sides. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, again, with Seattle, neutral field, they're a totally different team. I don't want to tease the pick, but all I'm saying is Seattle on neutral field, totally different team. San Francisco seems like they're built to win anywhere. In a dome, on the road, in the cold. They're just doing everything right. Here's what I will say, though. I know there's 2 weeks between the games.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a bloodbath at Quest Field on Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised if some players go out. They're going to be beaten up. No player is going to come out of that game the same as they were before. So in that respect, I think the NFC team is going to be a little battered and bruised, whereas this Denver-New England game is a little bit more of a finesse type of game. Yes. You know, you're not going to see a lot of punching in the mouth, so to speak. So I wouldn't bet on the AFC team winning this year, but I think that either team has a shot. When you have Tom Brady or Peyton Manning at the helm, and you're going against Kaepernick or Wilson, how can you say that they don't have a shot? I just wouldn't bet on them to win.
And no matter what team makes it, it's going to be a fun Super Bowl. I just feel like we've always had, it just doesn't seem like we've had teams like this that we're automatically going to have a fantastic two teams in the Super Bowl. Yeah. I understand it could be a crappy game, but most likely you're going to have some great storylines heading into
it. So many. No, and I think the NFL, you know, it's one of those things, you know, we talk about a lot, we don't talk on this show, but there's a lot of the talking heads talk about the BCS getting it right sometimes. I think the NFL this year got it right. Absolutely. With the final four teams. I think these probably are the four best teams, at least the two best in each conference. You know, the 49ers were tough luck, you know, fifth seeds at 12-4.
They're not the Kansas City Chiefs of the West, but they are the dominant team. The Carolina Panthers, as we saw last week, were not.
Exactly. And the 49ers played great ball to end the year. I think they might have won 7 or 8, something like that. After that at Colts embarrassment, they really took over and played well. So, you know, it's a good question. It remains to be seen, and we'll definitely do a Super Bowl preview show, and that's when we'll make our picks. All right, so why don't we make our pick for this Bronco-Pats game? What do you think in terms of a number?
All right, well, I don't think this game's going to go in OT this time, but I think it will be a 3-point game. I'm going to go 10 points less for each team from the game that was actually during the regular season, with Willie McGinnis being the honorary team captain. He's going to give them that little extra burst, and they'll win 24-21. It'll be reminiscent of the Vinatieri days. Gustkowski wins the game.
Sorry, say that again?
Oh, so I think 10 points less from the regular season game. Okay. 24-21, not in overtime. Gustkowski wins the game.
Wow, so you're thinking at the gun?
Yes.
Like, okay.
Yes, or even with 3 seconds left, it's within the last minute or so, I'm thinking, that it ends up being a 3-point, you know, extra push. And that's why Willie McGinnis, I feel like, was just like a nice little honorary team captain that'll push them to that little victory.
Okay. I like that. I'm thinking 28-24, Pats. And I'm going to go off the grid here. And there have been a bunch of times this year where Brady has gone down the field with an opportunity to tie or win the game. And I think what we're going to see is it's going to be 24-21, your score, but reversed. And Brady's going to have, whatever, a minute, 2 minutes to go, needing a field goal to tie, but it's going to go down and score the touchdown at the end, dispelling all those red zone concerns that everyone had without Gronkowski. And Brady does it in Manning's face, and we get to see the Manning face on the sideline, you know, with his little scowl after he loses. But I'm thinking 28-24. I think there's going to be a huge special teams play one way or another. I think there's either, whether it's Holiday or Edelman or Blunt, either that's a big fumble or a return, something like that. I think special teams may play a very big role. And I think Peyton Manning plays a good game. I don't think he chokes himself. I just think the Pats, and I'm talking about not turning the ball over, not doing anything dumb. I think the Pats just find a way to allow the Broncos to string together some first downs, but force punts, force field goals. And that's what I said. I think Belichick has been thinking about this matchup for a while. I think he comes up with something.
And Brady would say, if he wins this game, it would be the most satisfying win as he's ever had, which is really interesting. I feel like at this level, after all the history that these, well, players, I guess, not teams, you know, the Colts / Broncos, I guess, in Brady's era, have given him these just great games, it would just be one of those culmination ones where we're still talking about legacy here, just because, especially, Brady losing those last two Super Bowls, I think it'd be a huge thing for them. And talking about your fourth quarter pass attempts, I was looking earlier this year, ESPN Stats and Info tweeted this out. Brady had more than twice as many fourth quarter pass attempts this season than he ever did in a single season before.
Wow.
So I think if the track continues, it would be just like that.
And that's pretty much, it's indicative of how the team was this year. They were always in close games. The reason why it was probably lower in recent years is the Pats are in run the ball mode at the end, trying to nurse a lead. Whereas this year, the games were always in doubt towards the end, and he had to throw. So it's gonna be a great game. I'm really excited. I wanted to ask you quickly before we, because this will be a decent segue into the other matchup. If the Pats lose, how likely are you to sit through the game after the Seahawks?
Oh, actually, I like that. That's really interesting.
I'll tell you this: I'm likely not watching that game.
Interesting. No matter what,
not in its entirety. I'm not. I'm probably, you know, I'll go, probably if the Pats lose, probably go to the gym, burn off some steam. I don't know if I can watch that game as intently as I would if the Pats were winning and actually there was a rooting interest in who won.
Well, I haven't been able to watch the Celtics all this week, and you know the team that's near and dear to my heart, the most team, is the Boston Celtics, and they have a 5 o'clock Central game that day. So it's going to be on, but the Celtics will obviously be my...
Who gets the big screen?
Oh, the Celtics. Okay. It's a given. It's just because, all the stuff that I enjoy doing with them, and it's tougher to be stat-heavy in football. That's why I've, gravitated towards basketball. I just feel like that's one of the reasons why I'll be able to watch it. I'm going to watch it no matter what. It's just how much I'm going to actually be into it. If the Pats win, I'll be a lot more into watching a little bit of that.
And just quick last point. If this is where the Pats season ends, I'm not going to be that upset. And, we're talking about other seasons where, it's just been devastating. I've been kind of on the bandwagon of if the Pats make it to the AFC Championship, given all the circumstances, all the injuries, I think the season will be about as much of a success as you could possibly expect. Anything else from here on out is just more on the top. It's kind of like the Red Sox making it, winning the division. You weren't going to say if they didn't win this World Series is going to be a lost cause. I just don't feel like that. I'm not as invested in a championship this year as much as I want it, and it's going to mean so much. As, in recent other years where you just thought they had it, like 2011, 2008. So that's kind of how I feel going into this.
What's interesting is if you want to compare it to the Patriots seasons, 0-1 might be the one you can think of with this. They have nothing to lose, or it feels like they have very little to lose. I know they were talking to Philip Rivers, comparing this to another team. They're saying, Philip Rivers, you have nothing to lose against this Broncos team. He's like, well, we have something to lose. It's winning the Super Bowl. He's never won a Super Bowl. As opposed to where the Patriots are feeling, just like you were talking with the Red Sox, they've won quite a few before, but they are in that little stuck area in which they did lose two in a row, where that, I think, is in the back of their minds. That's where it's hurting them a little bit, and that's why you're right. I understand it would be a successful season, but of course you're going to hear a lot of down players when it comes down to it, when they're only two games away. They have the chance of winning it. And, by the way, we just got Dr. Jeff's pick for the game. You know what? Before I say it, I want to ask you, what do you think he's coming from with this? You can think of who's going to win it, but I want to see if you can get a score, because it's kind of crazy.
I don't know, because Dr. Jeff's been one to pick with his head sometimes and go against Boston.
Hmm. So this one is nuts, in my opinion.
I'm going to say he thinks it's like 37-12 or something like that. Pats.
You were close with one of the scores. However, he's thinking close score, 42-38 Patriots.
Okay.
But you're right. Not too many people were picking that.
That's an interesting number. I mean, that's 6 touchdowns and 5 touchdowns and a field goal. If that happens, Dr. Jeff, we will give you the credit on the air. Absolutely. That's an incredible pick. So I guess Dr. Jeff's taking the over on the points.
Maybe.
Also interesting there. Well, actually, I guess he's picking the Pats. I was going to say, if he picked the Broncos by 4, then he would be just covering the spread. Not covering the spread, because I think the spread right now in Vegas is 4.5.
I want to ask you about that. What did you think before anything happened? Because I had a number in my head when I was, after both teams had won, or even as Denver was sealing that victory, which I think you were touching down in St. Louis right as they were doing that. Yep. What did you think when I told you that the Broncos had won? What did you think the spread was going to be?
I think it opened up at like 6.5.
6.5 or 7?
Yeah, I think 4.5, given the home field 3 points,
interesting,
it is reasonable. I think because if you think that the Broncos are 1.5 points better, I think is more appropriate.
I don't know what it was. I think the reason why I wasn't sure, because of all the injuries that the Denver Broncos had incurred, I was thinking 3.5, maybe 4. And then maybe 3 was in my head just because they're like, oh, Brady, Brady, Brady. But it just threw me off. 7? I think everybody just jumped on that. And they were like, all right, well, thanks for the points, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why it was. All the way, yeah, to 4.5. I think that's fair. I think the Broncos are a better team.
Oh, yeah, it would be an upset, a sizable upset compared to the Seattle-San Francisco one. I think both of them would be, or actually...
What's the line on the San Francisco?
That's actually a really good question. I thought it was a lower one. I thought it was around 4 at one point. It never, I don't think, was at 7 or anything like that. It's at 3.5 at most places right now, and I thought it started around there as well.
Wow. So Vegas actually really buying into San Francisco. So let's talk about that. And I think next week's show, we can do more like legacy talk based on what happens. It's more fun to talk about it after the fact than to speculate about, you know, if Brady wins, if Manning wins. So let's table that for a little bit. Let's talk about Seahawks, 49ers. And let's switch it up. Instead, we'll break it down. I think let's do it post-pick. What is your pick in this game?
Interesting.
And then we can go from there and based kind of what you're saying, and you maybe stand behind, without saying what you think is going to happen in the game, give me reasons why you think that your team will win.
I like that.
So who you got?
So, right away, I think I have to say Seattle. Basically the best defense in the league. I know Carolina held that title for most of the season. But this Seattle club is just one of those teams that can just dominate you at home. You had mentioned it earlier this show. It's amazing what this team has done this year just because they can just dominate a team. Just like the 49ers, and they have.
Yep.
And you said it was Quest Field, is that what they call it? Yeah. I didn't even know where they play, just because you always think of the 13th man, or whatever they call it, the 12th man. The Seattle crowd is just like what you thought of New Orleans a few years ago. And I think they caused an earthquake last week.
Yep.
It's crazy. And I think that's why I go with them, just because when you're rattled, I just don't know if Kaepernick and this team can score that many points in a game in which I just don't know if the Seattle Seahawks are going to be held very low. Frank Gore does not scare me as a Seattle Seahawks, you know, per person in favor of the Seattle Seahawks. He's not that good. And then Kaepernick has not been as good as I thought he was going to be this season. I think he stepped up in the playoffs last year. He played great and he took over last year. I just don't know if they're going to be able to take it over. However, the 49ers, I am very impressed with them. I may give you a few credence to your argument if you are picking the 49ers. The only team not to allow a 100-yard rusher this year. That's amazing for a 49ers team, and that's why they're going to be in this game. I just don't know if I can pick the 49ers because I wouldn't be confident in them taking it. And I just think that this time around, the Seahawks, coming into this year, they won their first game, lost their second game. The last three times have been the postseason. I think they get over the hump this time because they're bringing back the old magic of when they actually made it to the Super Bowl just a few years ago when they lost to Pittsburgh. I think they make it just because they get over that hump.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna stay with the Seahawks also. I think this game is a legitimate toss-up. I really do. I think there's so many variables that are going on. I think the coaching is a wash. I think the quarterbacks are a wash. I think you give the edge and running backs to the Seahawks. I think you give the edge in receivers and pass catchers to the 49ers. Secondary, Seahawks.
Yeah, sure.
Linebackers, 49ers, and then defensive front. I'm calling it a wash. Although I do like Alden Smith as you know the best player of the group. But so a lot of even playing fields. Where I see this game being won is the matchup between Vernon Davis, Michael Crabtree, and Anquan Boldin, and Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, that secondary that is arguably the best in the game. And if they are able to guard the 49ers pass catchers one-on-one and allow the front seven to be able to, you know, to be able to bring an extra linebacker or a rusher and keep pressure on Kaepernick without worrying about having to have help over the top, that's going to be huge. But if they can't handle those three weapons and they have to, you know, play cover two, that's going to give Kaepernick more space in that first 10 yards past the line of scrimmage to run and do what he does and run the ball with Frank Gore. So that's my matchup to watch. I think whoever wins that matchup is going to win the game. Because I actually think that's where there's the most firepower on both teams, that one could take out the other, and it could go either way. And I do think Richard Sherman's the best corner in the game. And what a tough decision for the coaching staff of Seattle to determine who Richard Sherman guards. You know, do you guard Michael Crabtree, who's the more athletic receiver compared to Anquan Boldin, or Boldin, who is just an absolute beast in the playoffs and is just proving how stupid the Ravens were for giving him away for pennies? You know, it seems like Anquan Boldin is built for the playoffs. That's just like when he puts up his huge numbers or in the playoffs when his physicality really wins out. I mean, you look at his numbers from last week. I think he had like 7 for 127, something insane. And he just does this every year. Did it against the Pats, did it in the Super Bowl. The guy absolutely plays balls out every single time. So that's my matchup to watch. And I think Seattle wins. I can't overstate enough how important the 12th man is. It just, former players, current players, it's legit. So I think Seattle wins in a very tight game. I think it's going to be ugly. I'm thinking like something like 20-17. Just a game that's not pretty for the eyes, but fun for the pure football fan.
Interesting. Dr. Jeff has it as a pretty ugly game as well, 16-14 Seahawks. I think when you're talking about those San Francisco receivers, you're talking about switching off. They're kind of like, oh, well, I'm going to take this game. Oh, they're guarding me a lot this game. I'm going to take over that game. Green Bay, in that game, it was Michael Crabtree show. And then, as you discussed, last week, 12 targets, 8 catches, and 136 yards for Mr. Bolden. It's going to be an interesting game just because, you're right, these styles are very interesting. They work very hard to be bruisers, to put you out of your misery, basically, and just make this one of those drag-it-out games. By the way, 8 consecutive wins for the 49ers, including the playoffs, including those 6 that they finished the season with. That's amazing. And I just feel like they haven't been talked about at all this season. It's been almost every week that it seems like it's the San Antonio Spurs. It's the exact same team. It's the idea that they lost in the Super Bowl or the championship the previous year and then continue to get nothing as you're going through. Seattle seems to get that credence because of the home field, yeah. And I don't know why. That seems to bring people. And then Russell Wilson gets his, and of course Lynch with the Skittles. But the 49ers just don't get talked about. And that's why they could just sneak through this game and be able to get over that hump. They have not been able to play well in Seattle recently. But the 49ers had a fantastic season. They did. They just had a struggle a little bit at the beginning. It'll be very interesting to see how the Seattle team can respond to Kaepernick if he gets out in the open field.
Yeah.
If they're really stepping back and the safeties are really having to take out the receivers, is Kaepernick going to do it with his legs? It's possible he can because I think it's Kendall Hunter's the backup for San Fran. He has the speed that Kaepernick does. Gore's a little bit more of that bruiser. He kind of has that extra poundage that can get through on those goal line carries. But they do have that rushing game that could possibly give them the upper hand because if they're able to take Lynch out of the game on their defensive side, maybe they're able to take advantage on their offensive side.
If they can limit Lynch, I think that's the way to beat Seattle because you look at Russell Wilson's numbers of late. They've been pretty anemic. He has not been throwing the ball well. He's not a run-first quarterback. I think Kaepernick's more inclined to run. He's a bigger body. He doesn't mind getting hit as much. There's the lingering concern of Percy Harvin. Just that, there's been a debacle of a year for that. That trade, that was a first-round pick going to Minnesota. Percy Harvin's given them nothing. Yeah. You know, you feel bad for the guy. He pretty much has a few snaps, gets what looked like 2 concussions. I know he came back from the first one, but that looked pretty bad. I thought he was done. And then he comes back and actually gets knocked out of the game. If he's healthy, that makes a huge difference in their passing game because he's dynamic. You can give him screens. You can have him go long. He's returning kicks. Big game. He's the type of game breaker that a team like Seattle needs to have, especially because their offense just has not been so explosive of late. I want to ask you another question, just taking a step back from the matchup. Would you say, I'm thinking about this right now, and I think I'd have to, give it to Seattle, San Francisco. They are right now the best and most hate-filled rivalry in professional sports right now. And to give you a couple other ideas for different teams. Yeah. Heat Pacers really dislike each other. Clippers, OKC, they really hate each other. And that's not even like a playoff thing. That's just like from the regular season. Golden State, Clippers, I'm not even going to put Red Sox, Yankees, because that's died out. Dodgers, Giants, maybe. What others stand out to you?
This is tough. You're right. There aren't that many anymore. Really, and that's one of the reasons why the NBA is getting rid of divisions, or most likely will. You're right. I think this has to be the best one because of all these games in which you end up just seeing just so much heart and so much enthusiasm for the game against each other.
And the trash talk.
Yeah, this past week, no love lost, but there's no love gained. It's absolutely none.
I don't think it was this year, but in previous years, Pete Carroll's taking shots at Harbaugh, and Harbaugh comes back at him. And it's great. And it's not that they're. It's not artificial. I don't think it's like the media hyping it up and saying there's more. I think they legitimately hate each other. And football is the type of sport where you're hitting someone over and over again that generating hate is not as hard as it is in baseball where what's the left fielder going to do to, get back at the opposing first baseman?
And once it's Johnny Gomes and he's able to spike you as he's going into a base or if he's able to come into a brawl, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And pound Coco Crisp in the head repeatedly. But no, I think it's a great matchup. I think it's great. They've pretty much taken the, you know, the crown, so to speak, the baton from Patriots Colts, you know, of the 2000s.
Oh, absolutely.
That was the best rivalry in football. And that one wasn't even so much hatred. That was a lot of mutual respect and just knowing that you were going to see the Colts at some point, one way or another, at least in the regular season, because both teams were always division winners, but you saw them often in the playoffs. You know, that was probably the one that they took it from. But now it's I think, far and away, you know, 49ers and Seahawks. You know, maybe you can make the case for, you know, something in the AFC North. Those teams hate each other, Packers, Bears, but it's not on the same stratosphere as 49ers, Seahawks. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I would not be surprised if, you know, someone headbutts someone, there's a punch thrown. I think everything is going to be laid on the line. It's going to be a bloodbath, like I said. It's going to be a war. It's going to be an absolute war.
We have an addition to the rivalries in the NBA from Dr. Jeff. Cuban versus the NBA refs. I like that one. I think you'll get one last fine. Did you see him go on the court there? And
I drop an F-bomb. I saw you tweeted about it.
Thank you. Yes. It was the only time that we wouldn't. I think Bill Simmons calls them the Borkles. The only time you would not see the blur over his mouth for those. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was big time.
I'm trying to think what rivalries are there in baseball right now that are like legitimate? That are actually I'm talking with teams that like are that win. I'm talking with teams that are competitive teams that really dislike each other. And I'm not, you know, nothing comes to mind right now.
I'm thinking NL. I'm trying to think, you know, in the NL West, it has the potential, but
Dodgers, Giants.
It's the only thing that comes to mind. Because you always have the fans going after
Reds,
each other.
Reds, Cardinals. That's a decent one. They've had their few brawls over the last few years. You know,
there we go. Cubs, Cardinals from Alex. That's historical. That's historical. We're trying to think about that today. That's helpful, though. At least we have something. We haven't been able to come up with many baseball
Cubs,
ones.
Cubs, Cardinals right now is like having a rivalry with your little brother that's like eight and you're 20 years old and you like can beat on him just repeatedly. It's just like not even fun at a certain point. Although they just got a mascot. I don't know if you saw that.
That was going to be one of my what up with that. Did you see the news program that showed a not safe for work picture?
I did.
Of the... you didn't see it?
No,
so they had this news program where they took this random picture off the internet. It was this guy who made this just disgusting video, this disgusting cartoon version of this, I guess, would you call it, X-rated version of the mascot.
I think it's Clark the Cub.
It was fantastic.
Oh, I gotta check that out.
It was fantastic. So,
yeah.
Oh, man, yeah. So
that's tremendous.
But at least the Cubs have been able to find themselves into some rivalry, I guess, with the Bears not being able to do anything this season after giving up that pass to Rodgers. But, you know, as far as the rivalries go, yeah, you're right. This has to be the best one, and we're both going with the Seahawks. It'd be very interesting to see if the 49ers make it again, if they can win it. But this Seahawks team, I'm sure, is just starving for it, and Carroll just seems to be like that coach that would be able to just have these really odd plays. I just feel like he'd be one of those guys. I don't know why. I wouldn't see Harbaugh doing that as much. I just think that Carroll would be one of those guys that would just pull out. I don't know if it'd be this week, but it'd be in the Super Bowl, I think.
All right, I'm going to ask you, we'll ask one last question, and we'll move on to our, you know, rapid fire of just talking about everything else in sports. I'm going to call this the Be Careful What You Wish For segment.
Ooh.
And I want to ask you, as a Pats fan, which we are unabashedly Pats fans, and we're not going to hide behind that, which team would you rather see in the Super Bowl if the Pats were to advance? And give me a reason why. I can give you mine if you want to think for a little bit.
Yeah, I think you want to go first. I got to call for something.
I want to see the Seahawks. I know they have, you know, the better secondary. You know, they're a deeper team. But the reason why the 49ers scare me is because they get after the quarterback better. And I think that's one of the big pass concerns is pass defense. And they have three pass catchers that I'm just not sure the Pats have the capability to guard. Okay, let's say even if you put Tlaib on Crabtree and you have someone to guard Bolden, I don't know who guards Vernon Davis. You're putting Jamie Collins on Vernon Davis. He's as fast a receiver and he's as big as a tight end. I think Jim Harbaugh is a better coach also than is Pete Carroll. I want the Seahawks.
Interesting. I'm gonna take it from a different angle. I don't know if I'm going to go more on the field. I'm just going to go from historical perspective. Ready? The only player in NFL history to win each of his first road playoff starts, Jake DeLome. We might remember had some history with Jake DeLome in the Patriots history there. Colin Kaepernick, with a victory this week, would get would match Jake Delhomme as the only quarterbacks to ever do that. There you go. I'd rather see the 49ers because then the Patriots can dethrone Kaepernick and the 49ers. And then you'd see just two straight years of Harbaugh, especially after losing to his brother. Two straight years of Harbaugh losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah. No, that would be sweet. He's one of the... You know, Belichick will seemingly always be at the top of that list because of Spygate and because of all the winning, but Harbaugh is so easy to hate because of all of his histrionics on the sideline. He just see, and Felger uses this term all the time on Boston radio. He calls him a pud. He's just a massive pud, and you just want to punch him in the face. Nothing would make me happy.
What about the punching in the face of Pete Carroll for what he did to the Patriots? Is that also in the mix there too?
It's forgotten.
Okay, man. I didn't know because like, the Super Bowls.
It's like Rick Pitino, because he totally screwed up or something. Nah, you move on. It's Harbaugh. He's just a total dink.
A championship helps you get by those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a few.
So let's. We had a bunch of other topics to talk about. Stats. Why don't you lead off and bring up? We want to go and what up with that, or just talk about the topic?
I think we just go rapid fire. All right, we'll make it actually a rapid fire. I don't know if we ever go too quickly, but let's try to go right back and forth, question after question. Just give a quick answer on just what you think. Yep. Ready? Dodgers agree, 7-year, $250 million contract, Clayton Kershaw. Records everywhere. Galore. What do you think?
The dude's only 25 years old. I think that's actually good money for that team. You got to make sure that you keep a player like that. He's special. Two out of the last 3 years, Cy Young. The other year, he was second place. With pitchers, I'm skeptical about giving that much money that many years. With Kershaw, I'm actually cool with it. Next, the talk about expanded replay in 2014. MLBPA and the umpires pretty much come to an agreement. There's going to be challenging. What are your initial thoughts on the new system?
It's so much fun. I love when leagues like to change things because then you get a nice little wrinkle into a new season. Wild card was already an addition. Now we actually have something that will bring in the managers even more into the game. And we're going to get almost every play under the sun get replayed. The only thing I don't think is going to be replayed, I'm actually trying to remember, but what's going to be interesting is the second base rule. I still don't know if the neighborhood rule, it's not being looked at still. I'm surprised because that's something that just continues to get really odd in the league. I just don't understand it. But
the thing with that one is it's about safety. And if players really have to stay in that long, they're going to get cleared out.
Then get a stupid little softball base. Okay, let's do that then. If we're worried about safety, yeah. It's so odd that they don't have a rule for something where they don't actually touch a base. But that's just me. I understand not doing balls or strikes, but basically almost every other play. Reviewed. I like it. It'll be fun having the challenges. I can't wait to see what they have. Hopefully it's not a red hanky because I want something else. Maybe something like a little bedazzler or something. Something really, really odd that they'll throw onto the field.
Like a smoke bomb or something.
Or they could just tear off their jersey and throw it off in the field. Like, that would be fun.
The issue I have, we're not the demographic that's going to have an issue with the challenging because we're going to watch baseball games regardless. Yeah. But there's the group of fans that find baseball too long, and this is going to add time to an already too long game. So unless they find other ways to enforce speeding up the game, like getting pitchers to get on the mound and throw the ball, batters to not step out, these games could get increasingly longer, and we could get more and more fed up with the instant replay.
I think you just have to throw it out the window. It's over. It's going to be a four-hour game now almost every game, unless you're in like a 2-1 National League game with no challenges. It's not going to happen anymore, and it's just something, it's just a lost cause, just because baseball is baseball.
Yeah. Now it should be good.
So, in NBA trade this past week, Jordan Crawford, Marshawn Brooks to the Warriors from the Celtics, Tony Douglas to Miami from Golden State, Celtics get Joel Anthony, his little bit of a massive contract for a terrible big guy, and interesting set of draft picks, either a lottery pick within the next 2 years or a couple of second-rounders originally from Philadelphia and Miami. What do you think?
First thoughts. I'm happy that Jordan Crawford gets an opportunity somewhere where he's wanted. I think he's obviously going to be behind. He's not going to start anymore, but Steph Curry has injury, concerns. He's a backup point guard. I've heard that they're going to keep Marshawn Brooks, which I'm also happy for him. He had a chance to go down to the D-League, so the fact that he's getting kept. One thing I'll say from Danny Ainge's perspective, I know he got these picks, but all I know is at Crawford's peak, which is in December, he had that Player of the Week, I think he could have gotten a guaranteed first round. So he could have done more with that pick. Now clearly he got Crawford for Barbosa and Jason Collins. you can't be too greedy, but I think that Ainge waited a little too long to pull this trigger. And I know Rondo coming back has something to do with it. But if you're gonna tank, tank. Trade Crawford away in December and go with Phil Pressey as your point guard for the next 2 months. So I think Ainge missed the boat a little bit on this one, but you can't hate too much on this, you know, just this continued accrual of picks.
Well, how about Pressey with a 10 assists and 0 turnovers? And as far as the pick goes, hey, the Philadelphia 76ers, 2 first-rounders this year, and the big guy from Kentucky, I can't
remember. Randall.
Noel coming back.
So they might make the playoffs.
Exactly. So that could be a first-rounder. It would end up having to be like 16 or later. But not a bad situation right there for the lottery-protected pick. Oh, quick thing. Rondo, what do you think? And the tweet.
That was the tweet.
That was awesome.
For anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about.
The man
about,
or what?
Rondo tweeted out some number like 29 million something, which pretty 29 million something seconds, which if you did the math, was the difference between the time he got his surgery to Friday night, 7:30 Eastern, when he's going to be suiting up against the Lakers. And it was a very esoteric tweet a couple days ago to let people know
he was back. He went a couple weeks without tweeting. He did like some Thanksgiving late night meal thing. And then 2 weeks later, 29,233,386 SECs. And he must have done it just on some website where he compared it. Ah, fantastic.
I'm impressed with the math skills. That's so awesome. Just to give a subtle jab at ESPN, there's a video of George Call analyzing.
Oh, yeah.
The title says, "Can Rondo make a difference for Celtics?" just when I thought, ESPN, might have been getting some credence back, they've stopped talking about Tebow, and even though he got a job. And really? You're telling me a top 3 point guard who is almost always the best player on the court when he steps out there can't help the team? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
One really quick thing, right? Jeff Goodman tweeted ESPN. I think he just went from CBS to ESPN, so another ESPN bashing thing here. Ready? He said last year Celtics were better without Rondo than they were with him because of their record. He just put that out there. I'm pretty sure Jeff Goodman's good. He's fine. But just tweeting it out there, everybody was like, what's going on here? Yeah. It's just really odd coming from ESPN this last week. You're right.
I'm still not happy that he's coming back this early, but I do think if they are going to trade him, they need to get him showcased before the trade deadline. And so they need to have a body of work.
I can't see him being traded this year just because that body of work is so small. Just like trying to change the perception on Jordan Crawford, that might have been the max they could have gotten on him, no matter when they traded him.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why Rondo is not going to be traded this year. They need a seller they need a team that's going to send a big player back, and I don't think they're ever going to get that.
Yeah. What if that person, I guess that wouldn't really work, but what if that person was Kevin Love and Rubio, and you give them maybe your first and Rondo? I don't have to be more than that.
We'll discuss more about this. That's very interesting.
After the NFL, when there's kind of a dead zone, we can talk more NBA. Let's talk a little about the coaching carousel in the NFL.
Oh, sure.
There have been a slew of head coaching firings on Black Monday and hirings. The only one that has not been finalized yet is the Cleveland Browns, still looking for a head coach, which is
how expected, huh?
Just so Cleveland of them to just not be able. I mean, McDaniels pulled himself out, which is just kind of humiliating to a team when a coach pulls himself out.
Can Francona coach? Is that a possibility?
it's unbelievable how Cleveland. And Cleveland was the first person to fire their coach. They fired him on the Sunday before the end. Anyway.
Black Sunday, I guess.
Which coaches do you think are in the best position? Which was the most surprising? Which team do you think is going to regret their coaching hire?
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow. All right. Well, first thing, what I noticed was really interesting was the Bengals losing both their offensive and defensive coordinators this year. Marvin Lewis is going to be in an interesting situation coming up without them. Now, we look at Jay Gruden in Washington. Vikings hired Mike Zimmer. I think Zimmer has nothing to lose. They didn't win a game on the road this past season. I think Mike Zimmer is in a great position heading into Minnesota. And did he pass on Detroit to go to Minnesota, or was that a different coach?
I know that was Detroit allegedly to go to Tennessee, which shelled out the big bucks.
Really interesting there. So you had so many different situations, so many coaches moving around over the last week. I just feel like Jay Gruden in Washington, also a guy who's going to have low expectations coming into next year. I know Washington has their little bit of high hopes with Griffin no matter what. But once again, they underachieved this past year. So both these coaches, both the ones coming from Cincinnati, made a little bit going from the overachieving Bengals to the underachieving Vikings and Redskins.
No, they're in the position of buying low. And, whatever they do, if there's some improvement, it'll look like it's their job that they've done. But the biggest head-scratcher for me is Jim Caldwell to the Lions. I think Jim Caldwell is one of the biggest idiots in football. And I'm not trying to, impugn on who he is as a person, but he inherited a 14-2 Peyton Manning team when Tony Dungy retired. totally emotionless on the sideline. You never even see him open his mouth. It doesn't seem like he's talking to anyone. He took over the Baltimore Ravens team. I know they won the Super Bowl when he was the offensive coordinator after he took over for Cam Cameron. This year, Ray Rice and Bernard Pierce rushing for 3 yards a carry cumulatively. They couldn't find another way to make that running offense go. Joe Flacco regressed this year. I think Jim Caldwell is a horrible hire. Not to mention the fact that you have these personalities on Detroit that need an enforcer, a Ken Whisenant, a Bill Cowher, Jim Schwartz, someone that could actually discipline the players. Jim Caldwell is going to get laughed at when he yells at Ndamukong Suh or something like that. That move makes no sense to me.
It'd be great to see if everybody praises Schwartz after the fact. It's kind of like when you remove a player from a team and you see that this team is horrible without that player, and I guess Rondon will see if that ends up being
that. That was the case with Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay, how bad they were without him. But anyway.
It'll be interesting to see if the coach ends up being the X factor there, and it's a possibility with Jim Caldwell. You're right. You never heard one thing about him. I didn't even remember he was on Baltimore because no one even mentioned his name.
No, he must have, whatever profession I go into, if there's an agent involved, I want his agent because that agent's getting me a job. Any last thoughts, Stats?
I'm going to play a little game with you. Reason to worry. And it's going to be two NBA teams, one from the Eastern Conference, one from the Western Conference. The Rockets last night set a nice little record there. Scored more than 70 points in the first half, became the first team not to score 90 points in a game after doing that. So, is there a reason to worry for this Houston Rockets team that lost to the Russell Westbrook-less Thunder last night at home?
Yeah, there's a huge reason to worry. They're a two-man show. It's Dwight Howard and James Harden. Sometimes you get contributions from Patrick Beverley, Jeremy Lin, Chandler Parsons, Francisco Garcia, Omri Caspi. Like, they've got a lot of like decent role players, but you can't count on Dwight Howard to put up a 32 and 15 like you did against the Celtics. Harden's having to do way too much in running the offense. I think there's a lot of concern. I think they need to make a trade.
When one of your best players is going to get in foul trouble so often, and you're able to bait him into it. Steven Adams made this great play on him where he just hooked him a little bit, and then they got into a wrestling match. Fifth foul in the fourth quarter after a few good moves by him. So when you live by the three and die by the three, with the exception of Howard, you have a little bit of Terrence Jones on the side, but you're right. This team is going to fall short most likely in the first or second round, especially if they don't make a trade. Your other team, reason to worry. Miami Heat. This is the first time they've actually encountered a little bit of adversity in the regular season, other than their little, I think, 11-11 start the first year.
Yep.
This is really the first time since that in the regular season. The 30 straight losses to teams under 500 for the first time in their Big Three era. Reason to worry for the Heat.
I'm not sure. Because I don't put too much credence into regular season basketball, especially with a team that's got the championship pedigree like the Heat. But you got to start to consider that all the games that they've had to play the last few years, playing deep into the season with an extra 20-25 games, that has to take a toll on them physically. And Ray Allen's numbers have dipped. Dwayne Wade's missing games with injuries. We'll have to see, but it's going to be, first of all, they're going to lose out on home court to Indiana.
Does that matter?
I think it does.
Interesting.
They haven't won a championship without home court advantage. I think it's a huge deal for them if they have to go on the road.
I think health matters more than the home court. I think Wade sits out solid number 10 more games or so. We have about a half a season left. I'm leaning towards it not mattering as much because this Heat team needs to be rested. LeBron James especially. I don't want him playing. If I'm a Heat fan, I don't want him playing 80 games. I want him playing 65 games along with Bosch as well. Take the second seed and get yourself ready in a situation in which you're going to play 300 games within a three-year span. You can't put yourself in a position to have that many miles on your body as a three-peat goes. Michael Jordan, Steve Kerr, guys who have talked about the three-peat before, so tough. Looking for the first one in a decade, that's going to be difficult for this team.
No, it's going to be interesting to see if they can do it again. No team has gone to four straight NBA finals, I think, since the Celtics. So, you know, in the 80s. It's not easy to do, and that's why I think that it's not a given that the Heat do get back there, and the Pacers look like they're built to beat them this time around. All right, great show. I don't know where that hour went.
I know.
We'll be back most likely next Sunday is most likely. The K-War schedule is going to be coming out. We may or may not be pre-scheduled or not for next Sunday. We'll see. We'll let you know on the Facebook page. We'll do our Super Bowl preview show. It may be a two-parter or maybe just be 1 week talking about it either next week or the following week before the Super Bowl. Thank you for listening. Stats, any last thoughts before we head out?
Well, Greg Oden, keep an eye on him in Miami. It'll be very interesting to watch him. But
if he can keep off the crutches, right?
Absolutely. And if they get behind him as well.
Yeah. All right. Have a good weekend. Enjoy Championship Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.